Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here. Can you hear me okay? At the fourth annual Prophecy Conference, Ohav Shalom. It's my third one I've been able to participate in. Each year they keep getting better and better. I'll be speaking on the future for American Bible prophecy today. This one's exciting this year. Steve's even gotten a billboard going. Did you see it, Steve's billboard out there? It's right down the street here. It's a real fortunate to be able to live out here. Steve and I get to do breakfast pretty frequently, and I can remember about a month ago he called me and said, "I've got something real exciting I've got to tell you about this prophecy conference. Let's do breakfast." And so he piqued my interest all the way over to Coco's, where we usually eat, and I'm thinking, what could he be taught? What could be? I've never seen him this excited. I know his sons are too old for a bar mitzvah. I mean, what could it be? And I get there, and he's telling me about this billboard he's got and how exciting it's going to be. And I, with my business background, I said, well, Steve, there's a couple important things to know on a billboard. It's very important that the placement of the billboard and the message upon the billboard are what's critical. I said, you want to be careful about doing things like this particular billboard here, where you got to be put it close to the Palm Springs Airport there, and you can have a plane come and take out the corner of it or something like that. And you certainly have to look at the maximum height calculations on these billboards. You don't want to send a mixed message. Christ died for our, in his competing sign space, Dunkin' Donuts. Now, you know, some people, Christ died for our sins, are going to start equating sins, donuts, you know, that sort of thing. But then we started shifting the conversation to slogans and messages, and very important, you don't do something embarrassing like the Medical Marijuana Association. You know, they must have hired some stoners or something. Dude, we totally forgot our slogan. So billboards are extremely important with a message. You don't want a bad signal there. And, you know, we talked about a religious message. You know, there's one here, what part of thou shalt not, don't you understand? But I said, Steve, that might, you know, just get a lot of legalizers and Bible thumpers. If you want to bring in the younger generation, you should probably do something like put a little gimmick on it, like, you know, the Church of Christ, that you can come pray, but we also offer wireless internet. So we tossed these ideas around, didn't really figure out a slogan in that breakfast, and I said, well, Steve, when all else fails, you can do what my wife tells me every anniversary and on her birthday and Valentine's Day. She always comes out to me and says, just go to Hallmark, face it. You'll never come up with anything clever on your own anyways. So, anyway, that's a little bit on the billboards, but it turned out real good, Steve, and hope it generates a lot of traffic here for the conference. So my topic today is America and Bible prophecy. What is its future? And it seems inevitably, and I think I can speak safely for all the speakers with us today, that whenever we're at a prophecy conference and there's a Q&A session that comes up, we can count on the question of America and Bible prophecy, what is America's future, coming up. And there's three primary reasons that I believe this question does come up. There's concern for our country that we've left our Christian heritage and we're heading in the wrong direction. Very valid concern. Number two, it's very difficult to discover America in Bible prophecy. Unlike, you know, you see Israel all over the place. You even see Egypt and Libya and things like that. But America is not specifically noted in there. And we are living in the last days. So those three concerns have Americans very concerned about the nature and direction of our country and wondering what the Bible may have to say about our future. I'm going to be working with three books that came out. It happens to be that the Lord has lifted up some prophetic voices in our time who are very interested in this subject and written books about it over the last 2 years. Mark Hitchcock wrote a book called The Late Great United States. Came out in May of 2010. Terry James wrote a book called The American Apocalypse in 2009, and Dr. David Reagan revised his America the Beautiful book in 2009 as well. So I will be referring to a lot of what they have to say in their books. I've had the opportunity as a radio host to interview all of them on this topic and on their books, and I'm going to kind of give you a general consensus of what they say. I have some good news. They all came up with the same consensus, so the Lord must have led them to the right conclusions. That's the good news. The bad news is the consensus isn't that good for America. And so Mark Hitchcock says, it's hard to find America in the Bible, and that silence is deafening to him. Why not? And if America is in the Bible, at the indications I'm going to show you that where maybe it could be in a couple of places, it isn't the America of superpower that maintains that superpower status on throughout the end time. Something happens along the way. So I'll show you why he feels that way. So we'll be going over their thoughts on that. And I've got, you know, since America is probably not in Bible prophecy, unlike Arnold that had to take an hour and 15-minute message and condense it into 55 minutes, I've got to take 15 minutes and condense it and expand it into 55 minutes. So bear with me. Okay, well, if America is in Bible prophecy, well, the consensus they come up with is not necessarily that good for America, and there's a slide on that. Can you all see this pretty good up here? Okay. All right. So in order for America to be in Bible prophecy, America, of course, has to be in the Bible somewhere. Mark Hitchcock brings up when I interviewed him, you know, you wouldn't expect necessarily Brazil, nothing against Brazil, to be in Bible prophecy, but America, the greatest superpower that ever lived, you would think it would be in Bible prophecy, and yet it's not glaringly in Bible prophecy, which is unusual because you've got all these other places that are clearly identified in Bible prophecy. There's a list of some of them and how many times they're listed in the Bible. Israel, over 2,300 times. Egypt's in there, and of course, lots going on in Egypt as well. Lebanon's in there 76 times. You've even got Russia in there 5 times and deeply involved in an end times prophecy in Ezekiel 38 and 39. And some believe China's even in there in the Kings of the East. So where is America when you have all these other places? Now, a lot of these countries I've listed there, I'll be speaking about tomorrow on the topic of where's the Middle, what's the future of the Middle East for Bible prophecy. And of course, that's a very important and timely topic right now in light of what's going on with all the unrest over there. You know, there's a concern right now. You know what? So therefore, what about America? You know, we've been this Christian nation all this time. There's a concern with all this unrest that's going on in the Middle East that, you know, radical regimes may rise out of these revolutions, much like the Iranian revolt when the Ayatollah Khomeini took over the Shah. And so a lot of people are very concerned that our president is clueless with his Middle East foreign policy, and that could overtake our country adversely. And they're starting to compare him quite a bit to Jimmy Carter. Matter of fact, he's having a hard time distancing himself from that kind of image. And it's not really a healthy image for him at this point in time. I remember asking Arnold a couple years ago when Obama became president. There was Newsmax, I believe it was Newsweek, article in November of 2008 said, "Is Obama the Antichrist?" And, you know, of course, he won the elections and became president. I said, "Arnold, do you think Obama's in Bible prophecy?" And he said, "Well, you know, he's doubtful he's the Antichrist or in Bible prophecy, but there is one place, if he's in Bible prophecy, where he could be, and that would be the abomination of desolation," spoken, and that's in Matthew 24, verse 15. But on a serious note, let's go ahead and delve into where America could be located in the Bible. Some of the arguments that Mark Hitchcock brings forward that people think America could be the Babylon of Revelation 17 and 18, the unnamed nation of Isaiah 18, could be involved in the 10 lost tribes of Israel, the young lions of Tarshish in Ezekiel 38. I'll be going over that as well. We do know for certain that America is in with all the nations and the Armageddon nations. In the Armageddon campaign, we're told all nations in Joel 3:2 appear there. So let's start with as America, the Babylon, in Revelation 18, 17 and 18. Now, when the Twin Towers collapsed on September 11th, the World Trade Center, many people thought there was a connection that because the World Trade Centers were the icon of world commerce, that perhaps America was there in Revelation 18, verses 9 through 11. It says, "The kings of the earth who committed fornication and lived luxuriously with her will weep and lament for her when they see the smoke of her burning, standing at a distance for fear of her torment, saying, 'Alas, alas, that great city Babylon, that mighty city, for in 1 hour your judgment has come, and the merchants of earth will weep and mourn over her, for no one buys their merchandise anymore.'" Well, you know, there were some similarities, you know, they saw the smoke of burning, and then, you know, seemingly in about an hour they were collapsing and that sort of thing. But Mark Hitchcock points out that that Babylon in Revelation 18 exists in the tribulation period, and we are not in the tribulation period, that 7-year tribulation period. Also, it says, "For no one buys their merchandise anymore." Well, people are still buying their merchandise. So, additionally, Mark points out that Babylon is listed, or Iraq and Babylon, over 258 times in the Bible. And if Shinar is listed in there as well. And in every instance except perhaps 1 Peter 5:13, where maybe Peter's alluding to Rome, and maybe some of this in Revelation 17 and 18, it always talks about a literal Babylon, which would be in Iraq. So he nixes that idea that it's in Revelation 18, verses 9 through 11. But then there's the unnamed nation of Isaiah 18. Now, Jack Empey and some others tend to think that America could be listed in Isaiah 18. It says, "Woe to the land shadowing with wings, which is beyond the rivers of Ethiopia, that sendeth ambassadors by the sea, even in vessels of bulrushes upon the waters, saying, Go ye, swift messengers, to a nation scattered and peeled, to a people terrible from their beginning hitherto, a nation melted out and trodden down, whose land rivers have spoiled." Now, Dr. Hitchcock traces this back to 1856, this thought that perhaps America is identified here to Joseph Augustus Seiss, who was a Lutheran minister out of Frederick County, Maryland. And he and many of his contemporaries believed that this spoke of a great maritime power that had to either be the UK or the US or both. Now, Jack Van Empe of JVI Ministries wrote in his book, Great Escape, on page 206, "The nation has the insignia of wings, similar to America's national emblem, the bald eagle. It's a land that is beyond the sea from Israel. This designation of beyond Ethiopia eliminates all the nations of Europe, Asia, and Africa. It is a land with polluted rivers. Does that not sound unmistakably like our precious America?" So that's from Jack Van Empe. Now, Mark Hitchcock's rejection of this thought is that he says Isaiah 18 and 20 is a single connected, 18 through 20, is a single connected prophecy dealing with Cush, which would be encompassing Egypt, Sudan, Ethiopia, and Somalia. And he believes it's a warning to the Cushites to get in their boats and head back home and not to try to form an alliance against the Assyrians, is a quote out of his book. So he doesn't believe it's there as well. The 10 lost tribes of Israel argument, this is also called British imperialism or Anglo-Israelism, is the belief that many inhabitants of Britain are direct descendants of the 10 lost tribes of Israel. When Solomon had passed away, he had two bum sons, Rehoboam and Jeroboam, and they split the kingdom to the north and to the south, and 10 tribes went up north with Jeroboam. Assyria conquered them in 722 B.C. But they contend that many Israelites made their way subsequently into Europe, the U.K., and on into the United States. Therefore, perhaps the 10 lost tribes could be involved in the U.K. and or America. Herbert W. Armstrong, the founder of the Worldwide Church of God, was a proponent of this, advocated this. But Hitchcock's rejection is that after the Babylonian 70-year captivity, there are scriptural evidences that many of the tribes are noted again in Scripture, like Ezra. The Levites are in Ezra 1:5. Anna was from the tribe of Asher, and she even shows up in the New Testament in Luke 2:36. So probably not there as well. Some of us think if you want to find American Bible prophecy, maybe you might find them in the Young Lions of Tarshish argument. Now, many of you are probably familiar with Ezekiel 38 and 39, where this passage I'm going to read comes out of. That's a massive Middle East invasion of a coalition of nine, 52 passages described with great description in Ezekiel 38 and 39. Russia leads Iran and Libya and Turkey and others against Israel to take plunder and spoil. So that's the context of which this is written. But it says in verse Ezekiel 39, it says, "The young lions of Tarshish," Ezekiel 38, here's what it says, "Sheba, Dedan, and the merchants of Tarshish and all their young lions will say to you, have you come to take plunder? Have you gathered your army to take booty, to carry away silver and gold, to take away livestock and goods, to take great plunder?" So they look at Tarshish closely, and they believe that it could be dealing with America because there's a couple of trains of thought. Now, Tarshish was a Phoenician port in Spain that Jonah, when he was to give a message to Nineveh, he actually went toward Tarshish, the far limit of the Western world at that time. And many people believe that Tarshish would be Spain, And the young lions would be perhaps South America and Central America and the Latin areas like that. So that's a possibility. But also, some people believe that you could find them in the Tarshish would be also into the UK, and the young lions would spread out over to America. So that's where that argument comes in. But anyway, you look at it, the theme, and this is where I hope America is, and I put Ezekiel 38 and 39 after the Psalm 83 war, which I'll be talking about quite extensively tomorrow at 4 o'clock. I believe that, I'm hoping, that after that war, Israel will become a robust nation, very vibrant. It'll dwell securely in the last days in the midst of the land without walls, bars, nor gates. And Russia will be coming, we're told here in this very passage, to come for the plunder of the wealthy, prosperous Israel. And the theme of merchants of Tarshish seems to suggest that there will be merchants wanting to conduct commerce with Israel. And they're standing on the sidelines, seemingly in protest, if America is in there with them. And Sheba and Dedan, Sheba would typically be around Yemen, and Dedan would be Saudi Arabia and those areas, will be saying, what are you coming? Are you coming to take away some of the prosperity, the livelihood of Israel, the plunder, the booty? So I'm hoping America is wanting to conduct commerce and wanting to bless Israel in the aftermath of Psalm 83, because if we bless Israel, we'll be blessed. And I'll be going over that as well. But I don't know. We just don't know. But Israel will be a prosperous place. One thing we do know for sure, but one of the things Hitchcock points out before I go into the next slide is that even still, if that is America, it's reduced to a sidelines, saber-rattling, what are you guys doing? You know, not necessarily the superpower that would have any say-so in Russia's attempt. So it doesn't look good for America if we are in that as far as being a very strong superpower. But we have the Armageddon nation. It says in Joel 3:2, I will also gather all nations and bring them down to the valley of Jehoshaphat, and I will enter into judgment with them there on account of my people, my heritage, Israel, whom they are scattered, have scattered among the nations. They have also divided my land. And we find out in Revelation 16:16, and they gathered them together where? In the Hebrew, in Megiddo and Armageddon. So that is at the end period when the Antichrist comes, and Arnold talked about that in his first talk. So we, you know, the situation is, well, what America are we looking at that gets involved in that? It's obviously an America that is coming to curse Israel along with the other nations. And we would appear to be in there because it says all nations. If we're in his nation at that time, America should be involved there. Now I'm going to shift the talk a little bit to Dr. David Reagan. Some of the things he's written about, I had the opportunity to do a prophecy conference with David in Alma, Arkansas a few months ago, and he delivered a very powerful message on American Bible prophecy out of his book, America the Beautiful. And he points out that, he starts out by saying, blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord, in Psalm 33:12. And righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a grace to any people, in Proverbs 14:34. So we're going to look at how God deals with the nations. And I asked David to send me a few of his PowerPoint slides, which he did, so I'll be going over some of those and the ones I've integrated inside of his message. He says that God establishes nations and defines their boundaries. And then he goes to Acts 17:26 and says, Paul said, God made from one every nation of mankind, having determined their appointed times and their boundaries of their habitation. So let's reread that. Paul said, God made from one every nation of mankind, having determined their, meaning America's, appointed times, and their boundaries, meaning America's boundaries of their habitation, this large landmass of America. God was instrumental, and it turns out, and I'm going to show you two of the main purposes that God established America and set our boundaries in just a moment. But it turns out that America is fulfills a very important purpose in God's plan for establishing this nation. He goes on to say, God determines when a nation will cease to exist. God has a purpose for America. There we go. For each nation, both general and specific. And he talks about Genesis 12:3, that we are to bless, you know, God blesses and disciplines nations in accordance with their obedience to him and their treatment of the Jewish people. And he quotes Genesis 12:2, verses 2 and 3. I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you, and I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse those who curse you. Now, this foreign policy established 4,000 years ago to Abraham, where this was told, extrapolates on through Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and the Jewish people. And this foreign policy is still effectually intact. And as a nation, we have been a blessing to Israel for the most part. I'll be going over that in some of those aspects. But this is what determines whether a nation is blessed or cursed and how they treat Israel. And then he says, God blesses and disciplines in that way, and God holds nations in contempt because of their pride and rebellion, because they serve as idols. So let's talk about one of the primary purposes that God seemed to have established Israel as a safe haven for the Jewish people. We have many Jewish people over here, and they have been here for quite some time and growing communities over here. Dating back to the Edict of Expulsion in 1492, when King Ferdinand was going to expel all the Jews out of Spain and promote Roman Catholicism, in 1492 you had Christopher Columbus come within his three ships, the Pinta, Santa Maria, and the Nina, come on to set sail to avoid the Edict of Expulsion. He actually left on August 3rd, which would be the 9th of Av, Tisha B'Av, of the Jewish calendar, a day of fasting commemorating the Jewish destruction of both temples in Jerusalem. Interestingly, a lot of people are wondering, you know, was Christopher Columbus used by God, and was he a Jew to set sail and find America? Because essentially, that's sort of when America was founded, if you've done you've gone through your history there with your schools. And so some people are believing that Christopher Columbus may have been a Jew, and that the Jews and the Indians might have been the first Americans over here. And so it's difficult to know for sure, because what you had at that time was you had Jews were converting to Catholicism because they genuinely, some of them did, those were called conversos, but some of them faked conversion to avoid the persecution and the expulsion. Those were called Muranos. So it's very difficult to know if Christopher Columbus was a Jew. His name, Christopher, means divine calling. Chuck Missler points out that he claims to have boasted that he comes from the house of David, and that he studied Bible prophecy. So maybe, perhaps, Christopher Columbus was the first Jew to come over. And obviously, word got back to Spain and throughout Europe that there were Indians and Indian casinos and things over here, because shortly thereafter you have the Jews coming to America. And your first Jew was Solomon Franco in the 1600s, shows up, and then in 1830 you had 15,000 Jews. In Charleston, South Carolina, in 1880 you had 250,000 Jews in America. 1940 they were 3.7% of our population. America was becoming a safe haven for the Jews. Presently, they estimate it's about 2% of our population. There's about 330,000 million Americans. There's about 5 million Jews, of which about 2.1 of them, they say, are in New York. So those are some close statistics. So that was the application. We're a safe haven to the Jews. Then he goes on to say, he even gave us the blessing of serving as the key nation in the rebirthing and nurturing of the nation of Israel. And this takes us to 1948, when, surprisingly, Americans thought Thomas E. Dewey was going to upset victory over Harry Truman. And interestingly, Harry Truman was a very strong proponent of Israel becoming a nation. He was one of the primary leaders in 1947 to promote the UN Resolution 181, the Partition Plan. Apparently he was blessed, because he became our president and shocked everybody in that upset victory. Now, he supported the Jewish state, and Chaim Weizmann, the first Zionist president of Israel, on February 1st of 1949, came over and gave the traditional Jewish gift to Truman, a Torah, and his comment was that he had always wanted one of those. So America was instrumental with our president at that time in the foundation of the nation of Israel. Now, further application of the United States, God raises up this nation with the purpose of using our great natural resources and technical ingenuity to spread the gospel all over the world. So a safe haven to Israel, instrumental in establishing the nation of Israel, and instrumental in getting the good news gospel out into the nations of the world. In the 1800s and 1900s, we did that. We had missionaries come out from this country and spread the gospel throughout the world. We were a nation that was founded on one nation under God. Freedom of worship we sought after. One nation under God. Endowed by their Creator with unalienable rights out of the Declaration of Independence. As we fulfilled this purpose, He poured out blessings upon us, blessings like unparalleled freedom and prosperity and immense power and worldwide influence. And I told you how we were spreading the gospel out there. The doors were open. We had the prosperity that this country has experienced and became a superpower. But we became enamored with our wealth and power, and we began turning our back on God late in the 20th century. Money became our God. Greed became our motivator, and we kicked God out of our schools. We legalized abortion. And now, we have become the moral polluter of the planet. I'm quoting David Reagan on those things. And now what do we have? Change. We have a president who says we are no longer a Christian nation. We are also a Jewish nation, a Muslim nation, and a Buddhist nation, and a Hindu nation, and a nation of non-believers. How far we have come since the Declaration of Independence. Okay, so what does this mean for America? I'll let you judge for yourself. I'm going to point to where the consensus of these authors went, especially David Reagan and Mark Hitchcock. They took our attention to Romans 1, verses 18 through 23. And I'm going to read those from you. And it talks about God revealing wrath from heaven for certain circumstances. And you can see if this applies to America in its present condition. Okay, Romans 1. Says 18, says, "For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth and unrighteousness." Let's stop there for a minute. Ungodliness leads to unrighteousness, which the fruit of that is the suppression of truth. What is truth? John 14:6 tells us, Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life. The good news gospel is the truth, and that is what is being suppressed. We are no longer just a Christian nation, but a nation of non-believers, our president said. Because what may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has shown it to them, for since the creation of the world, His invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even His eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. That's pretty clear. We are to see God's eternal power and Godhead even in the creation, and men are without excuse if they do not see that. I show you a painting by Lyle Trimmer on Psalm 1, verses 1 through 3, dealing with this without excuse, but His invisible attributes are clearly seen in the creation. I love this painting. I was looking at it one day and I realized, hey, there's Jesus and the Holy Spirit looking at David as he's reading there. Do you see Jesus in this picture? If you can see it? Let me give you a clue. You see his beard? You see his hair? You see his eyebrows? You see the Holy Spirit anywhere in there? The dove? See it hidden in there? Now take a look at it again. His invisible attributes are clearly seen in the creation. You see him in your life, working in your life, answering your prayers and responding, because he's real. And he offers a relationship to all of us. That's the God we serve. So they're without excuse. Because although they knew God, they did not glorify Him as God, nor were thankful, but became futile in their thoughts, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools, and changed the glory of incorruptible God into an image made like corruptible man, and birds and four-footed animals and creeping things. Well, 1948 was a very interesting year. Israel became a nation. I told you Harry Truman was the president, and an upset victory. But that was also the year the Big Bang theory for the origin of the universe was espoused in 1948. Now our kids are being taught about evolution, and they're given a strong emphasis over rather than creation. Remember, we've kicked God out of our schools. So we have to see, is this stuff starting to apply to America? Mark Hitchcock starts talking about Romans 1:18. There's stages of abandonment that evidences that God is revealing his wrath from heaven. And he gets into them, and they're really quite subtle how it starts out. And his quote on page 94 of the late great United States is that Romans 1:18 through 25 sets the character and cause of God's judgment against a civilization. In short, these verses tell us that when people willfully reject God, he eventually reveals his wrath against them. People can't turn their backs on God with impunity. If you read further, you're told in verse 24 that in this revelation of God's wrath, people are given over to the lust of the flesh, sexual perversion. In verse 26, they are given over to vile passions. And the words are given over in each of these instances. And one more time, they are given over to a debased mind, moral decadence. Isaiah 5:20 tells us, woe to those who call evil good and good evil. Is that what's going on? Have we got it wrong over here in America? Mark Hitchcock points out the word for given over, used three times, is parodidomi. And he says there's two schools of thought on this. One, God simply permits people to have their own way and suffer the consequences of their actions. Or two, more proactively, God actively hands people over to their own sins like a judge turning over someone to their term of a punishment for their crime. More proactive. But in a nutshell, either one of these, it implies that when sexual promiscuity, homosexuality, and moral decadence characterizes a nation, it means, one, the Lord has already abandoned that nation. Two, the Lord has already given it over to judgment. And three, the Lord is revealing already his wrath from heaven. It's not that these things are happening in our country, and they are, and God said, because of these things, I've got to depart and reveal my wrath from heaven. It's because God has abandoned this country, and these things are happening because the hedge of protection is vanishing. I'm going to shift to some of the things Reagan says at this point. Regarding the wrath of God in these sections, it's called down from heaven for ungodliness, unrighteousness, as we've read, suppression of the truth, and worship of the creation rather than the Creator. So here's how he puts this in application. God steps back, lowers the hedge of protection, and allows evil to multiply. Sexual revolution, the pornography industry. It's a $10 to $14 billion industry. Let me just give you a few statistics on this real quickly. Some of these are a little bit dated, but in 2006, $13.3 billion in the United States was the size of the industry, $97 billion worldwide. They say it's $10 to $14 billion in America on the industry. More than 70% of men from 18 to 34 visit a pornographic site in a typical month. More than 20,000 images of child pornography posted online every week. That was as of October 3 from the National Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Children. Approximately 20% of all internet pornography does involve children. 100,000 websites offer illegal child pornography, according to the U.S. Customs Service, an estimate. And it's estimated to be over a $3 billion industry at this point in time, just the child pornography aspect. 57% of pastors say that addiction to pornography is the most sexually damaging issue to their congregation. Largest consumer of internet pornography is 12 to 17-year-old age groups. When I do these, prepare for these presentations, and I'm looking for those billboards or whatever, you type in Google and you type in something in pics, and you're going to get what you're looking for, but you are always going to find some seductive kind of thing, a picture of some woman or whatever. It's just all over the place. A child on the internet is not immune to this stuff. And so this is why you get these kind of statistics. But that's not all. And you get given over to a plague of homosexuality. The gays in the military. December 22nd, Obama signs a repeal of don't ask, don't tell policy. February 23rd, just recently, the Defense of Marriage Act, which defines marriage as a legal union between one man and one woman, and a major White House policy reversal. Attorney General Eric Holder said the Obama administration will no longer defend the constitutionality of this as a federal law. We are no longer a Christian nation, but a nation of non-believers. Then it gives on to a depraved mind. Society is given over to it. I mean, look at that. That's a face only a mother could love. You know, this is where we're going with our generation. I mean, what do you do with that? I mean, he's got more rings on his ears and cheeks and than my shower curtain. I mean, but, so that's where we're headed. I mean, that's, you know, you look at the tattoos all over the place, and I'm not trying to put a hit on tattoos, but I'm concerned about the digression that's revealing the wrath from heaven, from God. As per Romans 1, it seems that America's fitting right in those passages. So we are given over to some remedial judgments in the beginning. And as we turn into this century, look what has happened. It has been just an unbelievable 10, now going on 11 years. Starting with September 11th, Al-Qaeda takes down the Twin Towers, prompting a war in the Middle East in October, the next month, in Afghanistan, of which we are still engaged in. Russia fought against Afghanistan for 11 years and threw their hands up in the air and hightailed out. Looks like we're heading for that same time span. Iraq, well, we've been pulling our troops out. Supposedly, we've got about 50,000 left. Now, Obama on his pledge to get out. Well, we started to get out last summer. And now look what's happening. Iraq is starting to form a pro-Iranian government. I'll be talking a little bit about that tomorrow when I get into the unrest. Okay, and then you also can deal with other evidences that we have to watch here. Is natural disasters and economic upheavals. Let's look at that for a moment. Hurricane Katrina hit. And that was in August of 2005, interestingly, which turned out to be a Category 5, followed by Hurricane Rita the next month. Very similar areas. Katrina was in the central Gulf Coast. And they're both in the coast region. It's interesting, Bill Koenig points out in his book, Eye to Eye, that many of you may recall that in August of 2005, the Gaza was cleaned out of the Jewish settlements. And the day the last Jewish settler was brought out of Gaza, storm clouds were brewing over the Atlantic that manifested into Hurricane Katrina. So Bill Koenig points out, and I think he's right in doing this, that because we cursed Israel, we almost created a civil war by impressing upon Ariel Sharon, the prime minister at the time, that he needs to stop the settlements and get those Jewish settlements out of the Gaza, that we perhaps brought that curse upon ourselves. And that was George Bush at the time. So we get hit with Katrina, our most costly national disaster, came shortly thereafter. And well, what happened? Well, unfortunately, Ariel Sharon, in January of 2006, got into a vegetable condition. He is now at home. He's still alive. He's in a coma. And I'm not saying that that's connected to his decisions. But Hamas became the radical, democratically elected government in January of 2006. So that was their thank you very much, George Bush. We're going to put together Hamas, and I'll be showing you what their charter is tomorrow. And their charter is basically the destruction of Israel, part of the tenets of it. So then we had those. Then we had the mortgage meltdown. We've had that happen in 2006. Well, I was in the mortgage industry, and it was quite successful in it for many, many years. It was very good to me. But I can remember when this started to happen, I was on a vacation seeing family members up in Washington, and I get a call from my office that we've got all these banks we've been working with for years and mortgage companies for years that are just shutting their doors. People come home, go home from work on Friday, come in on Monday, and they tell them, unpack your desks and go. And I had loans all over the place that I had to pull out and try to find banks that were still open. There was mortgage implosion, hundreds of mortgage companies. That was a mortgage meltdown. Then you had the global financial crisis came out of that, starting in 2007, which is still going on today and has a lot to do with the unrest over in the Middle East. Those countries don't have high employment. There was a lot of youth under 30 years of age. There's a youth bulge over there. So it's still affecting the whole world. And then you had the BP oil spill. This was just last year. And there may be a connection because on the day that occurred the day before. Obama had announced that he may start, in a shift of policy again, that he may start to use veto power not for Israel in the future. Because we've always been the one nation that has vetoed things against Israel. Well, interestingly, the next day we had our biggest oil spill in our nation's history. Is there a connection? Perhaps. I'm not trying to tell you there is, but there may be. So, what does this mean for America? This cannot be good. Why is America not in Bible prophecy? Or if it is reduced to such a low stature. Here's some of the arguments these gentlemen have put forward. Well, it could be an economic collapse. Presently, we are at a $14 trillion deficit that will be handing over to our children. $1.65 trillion deficit. Gas is going up with the Middle East unrest. It went up 26. The price of gas went up 26 times out of 27 days in California. It was about $4 a barrel when I was driving. $4 a gallon when I was driving here. So it went up over $30 a barrel since this unrest has been going on, approximately, on the stock exchange. So we could experience economic collapse. That could be one of the things that affects America. External nuclear attack. Presently, there's 30,000 estimated nuclear weapons in the world, and they're not just confined to the Cold War mentality anymore. There's 8 countries definitely have nuclear weapons, and you've got North Korea not included in that, so that would make 9. Saudi Arabia procured 2, supposedly from Pakistan at the end of last year. And their concerns about Iran's move to take over the Middle East and form a Shiite crescent and the Fertile Crescent. So that would make 10. Iran is very close to wanting to have a nuclear weapon. That could be 11. Syria, they think, may. They found some Syrian plants recently that they believe Syria is trying to get a nuclear weapon. And, of course, now those are all connected to Al-Qaeda and Hezbollah. And, you know, what? How crazy could this get? Could we get a nuclear attack? Well, North Korea, it was just announced yesterday, is very close to having what's called an EMP, electromagnetic pulse weapon. And this is not about accuracy. These deal with burst altitudes. These are can be carried on a Shahab 3. They can be launched over a portion of America, detonated at 180 miles in the air, and a nuclear effect comes out of the warhead, and it just sends all the electronic components way back, and it's almost irreparable. It'll take a long time to repair the damage. From the estimates I've heard. And this could easily be launched off a tanker out of the Atlantic. North Korea is about to have one. And Iran, surprisingly, was known to be trying to launch and detonate Shahab 3s over the Caspian Sea at 180 miles in the air, burst altitude. So, according to Ahmadinejad, he calls us the great Satan. Who knows? Who knows? Could it be that? Could it be internal terrorism? Could we have a plague of biological germs and things that suicide people come over here and infect a whole city because they're willing to give their life for Allah? I mean, I don't know that. That's another thing. We've certainly experienced terrorism. We have Hezbollah. Already we noted that Hezbollah is at our borders to the south. They're not just immigration is not just involved with illegal aliens from Mexico coming over. We also have Hezbollah cells over there as well. Eternal rot, hedonism, could it be moral decay, things that symptomized in large part the Hellenistic Empire before Roman Empire took them over and in Rome? You know, I mean, these are all characteristic things of a decline of a society. So, you know, could it be these various things? We don't know. We are concerned. What is the future for us here? What about us? You know, my wife and I are raising our grandson for a year. Our daughter is going to finish her master's at Cal State LA. So every morning I take my grandson to his school. I drive him there. See all these kids coming into school. And, you know, I wake up every morning thinking it's the end of the world. This is the burden God's put upon my heart, that we're definitely living in the last days and things aren't that good. I mean, you know, we could be further down the timeline than anyone can imagine. And so, you know, I'm very concerned about trying to give them a future and a hope. What do you tell them? I mean, you know, the rapture, I talk about that, and I'll be going closing with that. But, you know, a very sincere concern. And many Christians You know, they just don't, they're not looking for the rapture. They're not looking for the return of Christ because they're just not done living their lives. They want to see their children go to college, and they want to see their, they want to marry their children off, and they want to see their grandchildren, and they want to have the American dream, the good old apple pie. Hey, and that is so admirable. But, you know, there's going to be a generation someday. Before I go there, I do tell my grandson, I try to tell him what it says, that God does have a future and a hope for all of us. And I tell him about Jeremiah 29. You know, it says here, let's read it, "For I know the thoughts that I think toward you, says the Lord, thoughts of peace and not of evil, to give you a future and a hope. Then you will call upon me and go and pray to me, and I will listen to you, and you will seek me and find me when you search for me with all your heart." And that's really the ingredient. You know, in this country, Christians need to be searching for God with all their heart. And he will respond. Can we have another Nineveh moment? I mean, I don't know. I don't know. But, you know, what do? We try. We pray. We try to walk, live a godly life and redeem the time. I think we're very far along the line. And I tell these people, I say, you know, I understand your noble aspirations to want to have that American dream again. But there's going to come a generation where you wouldn't want your children to even be on the face of the earth. And we're told in Matthew 24, verses 1 through 22, "For then there will be great tribulation, such as not been since from the beginning of the world until this time, nor ever shall be. And unless those days were shortened, no flesh would be saved. But for the elect's sake, those days will be shortened." There's going to come a time in the great tribulation at the end of the world, the last 3.5 years, where you would not want your children to be facing what's going on in that point in time. No flesh would even survive. There'll be probably nuclear wars being unleashed by man. There'll be judgments unleashed by God, the bowls and the trumpets and bowls. It will not be a time that you want to have your children around for. So the point is this, is that we are told that we can watch, therefore, and pray always. In Luke 21, verses 36, that we... It will come, it says, "Watch therefore and pray always that you may be counted worthy to escape all these things that will come to pass and to stand before the Son of Man." So we're watching therefore. And you are among the remnant of Christians that think these prophecy conferences are important because you are watching. You understand for the most part where we're at on the timeline. And you should pray always that you may be counted worthy to escape all these things. Not endure and not some, not escape some things. But escape all these things. So to me, that gives me great hope. And that's why I turn my attention to the rapture. Which for some reason, I'm just going to read it to you. 1 Corinthians 15, verses 51 through 52 tells us, "Behold, I will tell you a mystery. We shall not all sleep, but we shall be changed in a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trumpet. For the trumpet will sound, and the dead will be raised incorruptible, and we shall be changed." 1 Thessalonians 4, 16 through 18, "The Lord himself will descend from heaven with a shout, with the voice of an archangel and the trumpet of God, and the dead in Christ will rise first. Then we who are alive and remain shall be caught up together with him in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air, and thus we shall always be with the Lord, and therefore we should comfort one another with these words." Arnold said it's going to happen before the tribulation period. I agree with him. Now, Arnold says he's so pre-trib he doesn't even buy post-toasties anymore. It's going to happen, folks. This rapture is going to happen very soon. If you listen silently enough, quietly enough in your prayer, you can almost hear Jesus pounding the finishing nails on the mansions he promises us in John 14. I think he's almost done. I think he's going to come get us at any time. Let's pray.